Do you love reading Indian books that showcases the subtle evolution of city lives? Or stories that make you question the forgotten moralities? And that's how I began reading Beyond My Borders and found what I've been missing so far. Thus, understanding the necessity of translation for a dynamic literary culture. Hello everyone! Welcome back to yet another episode of Books.com LitCan with me, Subhashini. Today's book is Gachar Gochar, written by Vivek Schonberg, an established writer not just in Kannada language but also pan-India, and masterfully translated from Kannada by Srinath Perur, marking Schonberg's debut in English language. The title is quite unusual and funny too. Gachar Gochar. It's a colloquial phrase meaning messy or entangled, nonsense to be precise, meaning when things get tangled beyond repair or a knot that cannot be untied. But in this book, it connotes to a family relationship. The story commences with an unnamed male protagonist who is also the narrator, sitting at his favorite coffee house in Bangalore. It's a place he comes to often, morning and evening, and is in awe of Vincent, a laconic waiter at this cafe. Vincent is described as a sort of an oracle who knows what's happening without any help. So, he's convinced that this waiter has insights into life that he badly needs now. As he works up his courage to tell Vincent his story, he ponders over the many changes in his family. The narrator lives in a joint family comprising of his parents, his older sister Malati, and an unmarried uncle, his father's younger brother Chikappa. Later on, there is an addition of Anita, who our narrator gets married to. Appa is a salesman for a company that deals with tea leaves. With his meager salary, he manages to put food on the table and pay for the education of his children as well as Chikappa. The details of their lifestyles are minutely depicted, yet the kind of descriptive passages common in literary realism are completely absent. Vincent features prominently in the opening chapters, only to fade into the background. The same goes for the narrator's former lover Chitra, who worked for a women's welfare organization. The story shifts from the present to the flashback and again to the present, but the transition happens exceptionally smoothly. The life of the family goes off track when the narrator's father announces a forced VRS and as Chikappa announces to start a business of a spice company. The newly founded spice company reaches success in no time, changing the fortunes and lives of everyone in the family overnight. The family moves from a cramped small house to a new, larger house which offers a separate room for everyone, resulting in everyone retreating to their den after the daily family chores. The story revolves around how the family tries to adjust to a new wealthy lifestyle. Chikappa is the sole bread earner in the family and the center around which the rest of the family orbits, eagerly catering to his every whim. So everyone enjoys the wealthy benefits, some greedily, some casually. Each relative is introduced with a reference to their financial contributions, a bit like Jane Austen's eligible bachelors being ranked by income. But while Schonberg's observations are as meticulous and true to life as Austen's, something far darker is going on here. Marriages happen and begin to falter soon. Every attempt to establish a relationship outside this immediate family ultimately ends in failure. Malati divorces her husband and returns to the family home. It doesn't take long for Anita to discover the narrator is just a director in his uncle's company for namesake and actually doesn't do anything. And how this becomes the turning point in their lives is the rest of the story. Conflicts start to brew in the background whenever a new character is introduced and things begin to go gachar gochar. And then there are ants, the foreign bodies invading their space, disrupting their stiflingly organized world, and in whose destruction the family takes a growing pleasure. Quarrels, taunts, and differences never stop. But when Anita leaves the city for a week for some work, the family comes together like before, calling out each other by their nicknames and having tea, which they hadn't done in a long time. The narrator feels like cheating on Anita. This unity and diversity may be seen as a result of the family's sudden riches. But deep down, what they don't realize is that they had always been and wanted to be like this. It was the lack of resources that made them stick together. And yes, old habits die hard. Gachcha Gochcha is a great look at the contemporary life in India, the awkward mix of tradition and modernity, the internal impenetrable logic of families with secrets and of the cost of a newfound wealth. A line in the book sums this up perfectly. It's not we who control the money, it's the money that controls us. You'd be amazed that a small, short book packs such a punch. You get an in-depth look at Indian culture and family dynamics. Schonberg's characters are a varied motley cast in the form of Chikkappa, Appa, Amma, Malati, Anita and the narrator. Schonberg differentiates between the two eras of life through Chikkappa and Appa, where the hardworking Chikkappa is someone who understands that to grow in this world today, you have to change your tune. But the stoic Appa feels no such need and is silent to everything that goes on around him. He quotes, "Wealth shouldn't strike suddenly like a visitation, but instead grow gradually like a tree." It's almost as if the changes in his life have robbed him of his speech. If not his ability to think, it has robbed him of his opinion. The narrator, the third male in the story, is like a river, going where the flow takes him, never contradicting or asking questions or even stating opinions. It's not so different in many families here in India. Even today, the main breadwinner is the one who sets the rules and takes the decisions, with the others simply following them. The women are quintessential in their descriptions, with Amma being the one who serves the family, Malati being a typical spoiled brat, and Anita, the daughter-in-law, taking the role of a mirror in the family. A mirror that the family doesn't like and definitely doesn't want, simply because it highlights the truth, which they just don't want to see. It is through these characters that Schonberg weaves a tale that is honest and stark, which forces us to look within ourselves and face the truth of how money affects our lives. While the effect of money may not always be in the negative, it nevertheless forces us to question and perhaps, at times, leave behind the morals of old times, often threatening to wipe out the distinctions between right and wrong. Schonberg has the rare gift of economy of Anton Chekhov, combined with the psychological insights of Dostoevsky. It can almost be called minimalist. He paints his characters with vivid colors, showing their quirks and petty natures on one side and balances this with their human aspects on the other. Apart from being economical, Schonberg knows exactly which parts of story are best left unsaid. In fact, the description of certain everyday things is written so well that one actually stops and takes it in, especially from a house infested with ants, shaped like the bogies of a train, where you could see to the other end if you kept all the room doors open, to a spacious bungalow with a separate room and a double bed for each one, etc. At certain places, you really wonder how many small things we overlook on our daily lives, which in fact are extremely thought-provoking. I was astounded by the clarity and reality in observations. Minute detailing of the ants, the family shifting to their new house, the arranged marriage and its anticipation, and the oh-so-romantic honeymoon all had me identify with the writing. Again, I wish I could read it in the original language rather than in translation. By the way, this review is of the English translation by Srinath Peru. The translation is superb and does not feel forced or unnatural, but actually flows with certain character which makes this book shine even better. Srinath Peru himself is an author and he has written, "If it's Monday, it must be Madurai." The noted playwright, actor and writer Girish Karnad sums up the very high quality of his translation in the blurb where he says, "I was surprised how quickly Peru made me forget that I was reading a translation." This book isn't so much about plot as it's about character study. There is nothing iconic about the plot, I would say, but it's the writing style that made all the difference. The writing style is unique, from small things such as less family meals to more complex situations like failed marriages. It's fascinating to see the evolution of who they were to who they have become. As a reader, spectator, it's easy to see how horrid the family becomes, but they become so immersed in their newfound wealth that they can't see the changes within themselves. It's only through the arrival of the narrator's wife that their way of life becomes challenged. Schoenberg doesn't simply paint a picture for the reader to come, see, comment and leave. He renders the picture a voice. He traces many patterns in this beguiling work. It invokes nostalgia, aversion and unease. He examines the evolution of a family life. He examines the evolution of city life. He examines the nation's morality over time. And he examines the attitude of authority. Reading this book is an experience that everyone should go through, irrespective of whether the Indian context is relatable or not. It's a tale that, according to me, overcomes all barriers through the message it encapsulates and the truths that it brings to light. If I am to point out one shortcoming of this novel, it's the portrayal of women in poor light. With stereotyped characters of mother, mother-in-law, daughter, daughter-in-law, and wife. This book doesn't do anything to support women. Instead, the narrator is seen making fun of, blaming the women for their own miseries and fleeing away from it as soon as possible. Here are a few examples. With three women in the house, peace wasn't bound to be tested. The narrator says, "Whenever I try to start, I quickly run into one of three women, Amma, Malati or Anita, each one fearsome than the other. I sometimes wonder if their every moment is spent sharpening their tongues, silently accumulating resentments for later use." It gives the impression that the women folk have no better work in the household to do other than picking up fights. He keeps emphasizing how hardworking the men in the family are, but doesn't appreciate the women. The second incident is about his sister leaving her husband. The narrator again points out, maybe she had got used to having whatever she wanted, and this diminished her capacity for the inevitable compromises that accompany marriage. Really? Compromises don't make a marriage successful in the long run. This statement makes me ponder if the author is trying to say that women will compromise only if their father is poor. Other two instances made me wonder if this book was really written in 21st century. One being the protagonist breaks up with his former lover, Chitra, because she was a feminist and worked for a women's welfare organization. And the other instance wherein he says, in any regular household, family members glare when a wife begins to freely spend her husband's hard-earned money. As I said previously, the splendor of this work lies not in its plot, but in its narrative. A narrative that is exemplified by the author's acutely heightened sense of observation, of aesthetic, cultural, and psychological nature. Schoenberg cleverly deploys a well-ordered collage of bright patch behind a dusty calendar, a ring of stain beneath a sipped cup of tea, a curd-smeared hand going dry during a tense conversation over dinner, and many similar visuals. He highlights almost in an unassuming, understated way, the cultural nuances of an Indian Kannada family. The book is just over 100 pages, fewer than 28,000 words, and the pace of the book is slow, but it kept me hooked and I finished it in one go. It's a mysterious, naughty, and dangerously foreboding story about the collateral damage of success that will remain with you long after you have finished reading it. Actually, I too wanted to read stories that would stay with me long after I had read them. The open ending leaves you contemplating on the various scenarios. The climax is equally gripping and mysterious. The ending not made clear makes it even more fascinating. To get a more comprehensive picture of India's vast cultural milieu, we must read regional authors, and for that we need more translations that would do justice to the rich cultures and subcultures of India. Hope you liked my review. If you're listening to this on Spotify or Apple, please do rate and review our show. This would help us a lot to reach more lovely people like you. And you know where to find me on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube to share your comments, book suggestions, and if you haven't clicked that follow button, do consider doing it. You can also write to me at books.com/subhashini@gmail.com. Thank you for staying tuned till the end. See you in the next episode of books.com. Till then, sayonara.